Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome in to 2024, our first show of the year. Happy New Year. Inside the Clubhouse is back, and we're glad to have you along for the next hour and 45 minutes. Off early today at 10:45, but we have a fantastic show for you, and happy to be back filling in for David alongside Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito, and Bruce, our first show of 24. We've got Cubs convention next week, and still some big moves made for your Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I'm excited about next weekend as well, Mike. Cub convention, the Score will be there both on Friday and Saturday. We will be doing our show Saturday next week from 9 to 11 at the Cub convention. So it's always an exciting time. But, Mike, the old year and the new year are similar in one way. The Cubs have still not made a move toward adding to their 2024 season. Chicago White Sox continue to add small pieces out there that may not sound too exciting to you right now, but may eventually be all about the Chicago White Sox working toward being a contending team again. And your input is always essential here at Inside the Clubhouse. 312-644-6767. With the White Sox right now, Mike, they have added two new pieces over the last few days, and that is Martin Maldonado, a Hall of Fame-type defensive catcher, not so much offensively, and they added Brett Phillips, a great defensive outfielder, not so much offensively. So from those perspectives, if you're a White Sox fan, it didn't move the needle for you, but Maldonado is a great catcher, Mike, a guy that can make a difference with a pitching staff. He can make a difference with a contending team. This might not be a contending team in 2024, but it's a team that has to be able to grow. It's going to be a young pitching staff, both on the rotation and in the bullpen. So from that perspective, having veterans like him and Stassi behind the plate, essential pieces going forward for them as they learn to be a contending team once again.
Yeah, and Sox fans, we want to hear from you. 312-644-6767. Are you happy with the defensive signings, or at least do you understand the goal with the defensive signings and the pitching signings? Because really, Bruce, you know, the Sox have made a bunch of moves. It's just none of them would be considered, you know, a huge splash. It's middle relievers. It's defensive catchers. It's, you know, Paul DeJong at short. It's things like that. Now, the Dylan Cease thing, and you can say the Aaron Bummer trade was a big one, and I expect some of those pieces would be big players for the White Sox going forward. But, you know, the big move hanging out there, and, you know, there's kind of a timeline with this, even though there's not, is the anticipated trade, although it hasn't happened yet, but the anticipated trade of Dylan Cease.
Well, Dylan Cease will be traded, okay? And that is a for sure. Now, you listen to different baseball talk shows, you listen to Sirius XM, their talk shows on their MLB radio network. You know, they talk about, you know, seizing the moment, exactly when that is going to be. I can guarantee you it won't be before Blake Snell signs as a free agent. I can guarantee you it won't happen before Montgomery signs as a free agent. I can guarantee you it won't happen before Imanaga, who has to sign by next Wednesday, signs as a free agent. I can probably convince most people to believe that it won't happen before any of the bigger free agent pitchers are signed. There is no rush for the Chicago White Sox. All it does is create a bigger market from the teams that weren't able to sign these guys going forward, including the Chicago Cubs. You haven't heard them mentioned. You probably won't hear them getting mentioned, but why wouldn't the Chicago Cubs be interested in reacquiring Dylan Cease, who they traded along with Eloy Jimenez for an essential pitcher back in 2017, one that helped them win, but certainly that is a trade that looked at right now as a big win for the Chicago White Sox. Why wouldn't the Chicago Cubs try to repurchase Dylan Cease?
Yep, it makes a ton of sense. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I mentioned we have a fantastic show for you today. Bob Costas, the Hall of Famer, one of the best ever to do it. Bob will join us during the 10 o'clock hour. We will also talk at the bottom of this hour to the American League Manager of the Year from the Baltimore Orioles. Brandon Hyde will join us. Excited to talk to both of those guys. Excited to talk to you. 312-644-6767. The phones are lighting up, Bruce. Let's head on out there. We'll start in Glencoe. Mike joins us. He's up first on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, fellas. And Bruce, I'd like to challenge your last comment. As a Sox fan, I think it's fair to reevaluate the Eloy Cease deal and call it at least a draw. I think if you look at the numbers over the years, I'll bet Chu has won more games. And I've always thought that I'm not a Cub guy and I'm not a Theo guy, but I always thought that Theo knew what he was doing when he traded Eloy. Cease is coming off a terrible year. I can't call it anything else. And Eloy, as Bob Nightingale said, we can't give the guy away. So I'd like your thoughts. I just don't think we won the deal.
Right. It's an interesting concept, Mike. You know, and stay on for a second because you and me and Espo can. Okay, so we lost him. But Mike.
No, I'm here.
Okay. But the idea here is the metrics people will tell you the White Sox won the trade. But you're right. Quintana certainly helped the Chicago Cubs contend and stay within the playoffs in 17 and 18 while he was a pitcher for the Cubs. And he was a fine number four pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. They needed it. They needed the innings desperately. So I wouldn't say that it was a horrible trade for them. I would say Espo, upside of Cease and Jimenez were considered so high after they started their careers. Now we've seen maybe diminishing results from Jimenez at the very least.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, listen, to me, the wild card in that is Cease. You knew what you were getting, right? You were trading present for future if you were the Cubs. You were happy to have Quintana, even though he might not have been as good as he was for the White Sox. He was still a good, solid piece for those teams that were trying to win the World Series. But to me, Mike, I mean, yeah, the difference was when Cease was pitching like a Cy Young Award winner, then it's like, well, yeah, of course. I mean, this trade was to the White Sox. And we'll see. You know, maybe with the haul they might get back from him to call her, Mike. I mean, we'll see what they get back in this trade. That could kind of tip the scales again in favor of the White Sox in terms of how you view this whole thing. So we appreciate. Go ahead, Mike. All right. Yep. So, Mike, we appreciate the call. Yeah. And Bruce, I mean, it's kind of fascinating when you think about it, and we'll find out very soon before the season starts, certainly, and what the end result of that Quintana for Cease and Jimenez trade is when you figure out what the Sox flip Cease for. But, you know, on the flip side, if you're the White Sox, I mean, you thought Cease was going to be your ace for your contending window. Now you're dumping him because you're obviously not in a contending window. That's got to be extremely frustrating.
And that's a great point, Mike. The idea is they're not trading Dylan Cease because he had a bad year last year where he gave up 40 more hits and the ERA was off and he was wild in the strike zone. The fact is the stuff is still really great. He struck out over 200 guys, six in the league. He still threw upwards of 180 innings, one of the top innings guys in the game. So from that perspective, you're not trading Cease because he stinks. You're trading him because you are in a different mode right now. You have 2 years left of contract control. You're trying to rebuild your team, and you have a agent 2 years down the line that will take Dylan Cease to full free agency. So from that perspective, there's no better time than now to trade Dylan Cease to a contender who will give you their top, hopefully their top young players for him for two runs at a world championship.
312-644-6767 is our number. The agent for Cease, as will be no surprise to our listeners, is Scott Boras. We've talked about Scott Boras, Bruce. We've talked about his methodology and holding guys, into the spring, even into spring training a lot of times. I mean, he did that famously with Bryce Harper. He has a ton of guys, including Cody Bellinger, including Snell, including Montgomery, including Cease. All the guys it's Scott Boras Palooza, exactly. Yeah. All the guys we talk about that have importance to both the Cubs and Sox on many different levels, a lot of them represented by Scott Boras, and that will absolutely and has absolutely played into this offseason.
Yeah, Mike, the question is, and again, 312 texter says, might as well run last week's show because you're talking about the same topics. Reality is that, yeah, we are in some cases talking about the same topics because it is topical. The Cubs have not made a move. They will make moves. But again, do you blame Scott Boras or do you blame the Chicago Cubs for this lack of movement? And, again, I don't know if blame goes either place. We're still January 6th right now. The frustration level for baseball fans is, well, Boras is holding up the marketplace by wanting to have a domino effect of when he signs his players that he can move the others on to other markets or the same market, whereas there's not any games being played right now. So we can talk about the fact that the Cubs haven't done anything. It really doesn't matter at this point. All that matters is what happens and who shows up on February 12th and on on March 26th when they start the major league season.
312-644-6767 is the number. We'd love to talk to you about what we're talking about. And before we get back to Imanaga, Bruce, and I want to ask you some questions about that to kind of inform our listeners. We want to get back out to the phone lines, though. Ron is on the south side with some Sox thoughts. Hey, Ron, good morning. You're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, good morning and happy New Year, gentlemen. You could argue that trade was almost a wash, and maybe because Eloy Jimenez just turned out to be a big, big disappointment. That's what just kind of drags it down. When they first made the trade, people really thought the Sox had got won over on that trade. So that's what that is. But, Mike, I agree with you, but right now you still have to hold out because it depends on what you can get for Cease. And I want to ask you all, initially there was talk about the Sox trading with Atlanta. I don't know how much that's doable now with them with the move they made. But, guys, I know, Bruce, you said that the White Sox are looking for pitching. But I think at this point, you just have to – if you can get top prospect, Baltimore has five, based on everything I'm reading, five of the top 50 prospects in baseball. Baltimore really needs a pitcher like other teams, but that is what I'm looking – I'm hoping the White Sox are able to make the trade for Cease with Baltimore, and they do have the best prospect. Not pitchers, but at this point, the White Sox need everything. So I just want – that's my comment, guys. I really hope they're able. And then if they do that, Mike, and able to get some top prospect, then you could still make the argument that the Sox benefited from that trade. Thanks, guys.
Interesting comments, for sure, from Ron. And, Mike, when you look at the Baltimore market, and we'll be talking to their manager, Brandon Hyde, in just a few minutes here on Inside the Clubhouse. You know, certainly we won't be able to talk to him directly about players and other teams because that's tampering. But the general needs of the team is going to be something that we obviously talk about. There's a lot of teams out there that have good minor league systems. The White Sox are looking to match up for the best prospects they can get back. And by getting the best prospects, they do. If you trade Dylan Cease, who is considered one of the top pitchers in Major League Baseball, you have to get some pitching back. There is no question about it. And the quickest way to get back to contending, Mike, as we know, you can have the sexiest lineup in the world with the most guys that hit 45, 50 home runs. You better have some people that can get people out, both in the rotation and in the bullpen.
Yep. No, and the Sox, I mean, we talked about it right off the top. Their signings, while not front page news in the baseball world, they're with purpose. They're for defense, and it's pitching moves, right? It's middle relief. It's guys up the middle who you think are going to help you defensively. And, you know, Martin Maldonado, I know he's not going to get a ton of love, and Sox fans probably couldn't pick him out of a lineup, but I know that everyone universally from the Astros loved playing with him, loved pitching to him. They considered him almost a player manager, you know, in that type of role. He was a elder statesman kind of guy, but certainly a guy that helped shepherd young guys along and certainly was there for the pitching staff. I mean, that sounds great for what the Sox are needing and what they're looking to do, even if he doesn't contribute a ton offensively.
Mike, when you look at the White Sox pitching staff right now, you realize, you know, they have a bunch of young pitchers coming on. They have some maybes, but they need all kinds of fortification, and that's where they're really going to go. Do they need more players up the middle? Do they need players for the future at the other positions? Certainly, but pitching is where you start. And that's where you have to really get the lion's share of players back if you're going to trade a Dylan Cease.
I want to talk to you about Shoto Imanaga. We talked about him last week. He's the Japanese left-handed pitcher, 30 years old, expected to get a nice deal here in free agency. But you mentioned that he has to sign this week. So that's we know something is going to happen this week. I believe Wednesday is the day. But if you could maybe enlighten the audience as to why he has to sign this week and what things are looking at in terms of Imanaga's free agency.
Well, it's a posting system from Japan. When you're posted, you have 45 days to sign or you must go back to Japan. That's the case for Imanaga. And Imanaga, as we've talked about before, 91-92, five-pitch pitcher. Excellent pitcher, not a power pitcher, but certainly a guy that can induce enough ground balls. The Cubs have been in on him stealthily from the beginning. Whether or not they're going to be in on him at the end here this Wednesday, we will find out. I know they have interest in him. It's not going to be a Yamamoto, you know, mega millions, mega year deal like he got, but I would say it's a 4 or 5 year deal, somewhere in the 20s for him per season. It still sounds like a lot of money, Mike. You know, you're talking about $100 million maybe throwing around for a guy that hasn't pitched in the major leagues. But again, a very excellent pitcher in Japan, a guy that was on the mound to start the WC final where the Japanese defeated the United States last March. So, again, we will follow that progress up till Wednesday.
And pretty fascinating when you think about it, Bruce, between Ohtani, Yamamoto, and then Imanaga, the big dominoes to fall in free agency thus far have all been Japanese players. All of the highly touted Japanese players are the ones that are going first. And, you know, the posting system certainly has something to do with it in the case of Yamamoto and Glasnow. But talking to Cubs fans, again, 312-644-6767, would an Imanaga signing be something that interests you? Or is that something where, as Bruce just said, seems like a lot of money? Are you inclined to think that Imanaga would be a great addition to the Chicago Cubs? Give us a ring, 312-644-6767. A few more calls here, Bruce, as we go back out to the phones. Valpo, Paul is on inside the clubhouse talking Cubs. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Hey, guys, good morning. Yeah, you know what? I mean, in regards to Bruce, you just asked, is it Boris's fault or is it the Cubs' fault that they're at this stalemate? I think it's a little bit of both, and it's really Major League Baseball's fault. You just talked about the Japanese pitcher in regards to this drop-dead January 12th date. Major League Baseball has to have come up with some type of rule that these players have to be signed by a certain date. It hurts everybody. It hurts the players when Bryce Harper has to report to spring training late because Scott Boras represents half of Major League Baseball, and especially the top-level players, and the Cubs don't want to give in, and they're going to wait till the big money spenders are done spending. So they have to come up with some type of rule that says, you know, January 15th or February 1st at the latest, these players have to sign. Because there's so many initiatives to make the games quicker and to make it better for younger fans. It just makes Major League Baseball's free agency period and off-season period so much boring than the other sports.
I can't disagree with that, Mike, and thanks for your call. I appreciate it, Paul. It does make it boring, and the repetition of it from week to week where we talk about what's going on and how slow the market's moving is not exciting. But at the same point, it's a free market, okay? Mm-hmm. I like free markets. You know, I like the idea. I hate the idea that there is a trade deadline. Why does there have to be a trade deadline? Okay, give me a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically trying to spur teams that are either going for it or we're not, and you don't want to have chaos throughout September, and then you start saying, oh, well, you know what? You know, Team X is now out of it, and they weren't out of it in July, so now they can trade so-and-so to the Yankees, for example, and I think they're trying to avoid chaos. But, I mean, to truly know why there's a deadline, I don't have an answer for that.
Again, does it add to, you know, would it add to excitement if they had a deadline of January 12th that you must have free agents signed? But then again, how can you do that? I mean, you have 100 guys out there right now, right? What happens to them?
Okay. Yeah. Well, and the other part of this,
they can't sign anymore in the offseason.
Yeah.
They can't find a team. So, you know, with baseball, it's so different than the other sports because every offseason, the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, you have 150 free agents. Okay. It's a flooded market. You just can't say, okay, you know, if you're not signed by them, you can't play in the major leagues this year. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other part of this, and Paul touched on it, so many of the big names, I mean, in this case, this year is a good example, so many of the big names are represented by one guy, and it's Scott Boras, and his methodology and how he likes to do business for his clients is he will hold them out as long as he has to until he gets a number that he wants to hear from whomever the club is signing the player. But, you know, Cody Bellinger, Matt Chapman, Snell, Jordan Montgomery, I mean, all of these guys that we've been talking about, you know, since we started doing the show after the season, you know, once baseball season was over, all of these free agents that would generate big news, with the exception of the Japanese players that we mentioned, a lot of them are Boras clients, and he is in no rush to sign them. So it does make for a slow offseason, a slow free agency period. But as you said, what are you going to tell these players? Sorry, you can't hire Scott Boras as your agent? You can't do that, right? I mean, that's just not realistic.
Right. You know, again, other sports have trading deadlines and things like that, and so does Major League Baseball. But to be able to sign a free agent, you know, just not workable. Hey, we have to take a break. We'll be right back soon. Obviously, we're going to talk to Brandon Hyde, the American League Manager of the Year, Baltimore Orioles manager and former Cub coach will be joining us. He's Mike. I'm Bruce. It's Inside the Clubhouse.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
You all were patient. You tuned in night after night, hoping for a moment like this. The 1-1 to Story is grounded to third. Ramon Urias from third. The Orioles have done it! Go crazy, Baltimore! You are the new champions of the American League East!
And there it is, the Orioles clinching the American League East. And 101 win team last season, one of the best in all of baseball. Let's talk a little baseball, talk a little Orioles. We head on out to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Sports Illinois.
The American League Manager of the Year, our friend Brandon Hyde, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Brandon, Happy New Year. I think today's January 6th, so I think the cutoff's probably yesterday or today for Happy New Year. But thanks for joining me and Mike today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Bruce, always great to hear from you. And, Happy New Year to everybody.
So we're going to jump right into it because the baseball offseason has been slow. And by slow, I mean from Chicago fan standards here and maybe all across Major League Baseball because of the fact that the Ohtani market, Yamamoto market, the Scott Boras markets have kind of held things up this offseason. From a patient's point of view, as a manager of one of the top teams in baseball, as well as a baseball fan, how do you observe this offseason?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, I think there was a couple big fish out there that everybody was kind of waiting for to see what happened with a couple guys, and then from there, the dominoes will fall, and I'm sure you'll see a busy January. There's a lot of players out there. I know I'm sure there's a lot of talks being had right now, but there's a lot of guys without jobs right now that are really talented players, and we'll see where it takes us. But January, I think this January is going to be a pretty active offseason, either from a trade standpoint or a free agent standpoint. We'll see. I don't have any inside information, but I just think there's a lot of players out there still available, so I just think that it was slow because of the Ohtani Yamamoto signings, and everybody was kind of waiting to see what happened there.
Brandon, as we talk about Baltimore, and we played the clip of you guys clinching the division last season for Baltimore, 101 wins last season, certainly a great season by any measure, and you guys have one of the youngest teams in baseball. There's a lot of great young players, star prospects on your team. Could you see the results coming last season? I mean, you know, in spring training last year, did you see, say, hey, this is going to be a really good team. These young guys are ready to move now.
Well, I don't think you ever predict or expect to win 100 games, especially in the division we play in. But I thought that, you know, we had a good year the year before. We surprised everybody. We were 30-plus wins more than we were supposed to. Everybody thought we were going to do with 83 wins in 2022. And so I knew that, and with pretty much the same group coming back and with everybody getting a year older, adding a couple of veteran guys that I was hoping that we're going to be super impactful in our clubhouse and help our young guys out, and Adam Frazier, McCann, Kyle Gibson, those guys did that. I thought that we had a chance to improve. I didn't know if it was going to be, I don't know how many wins, but I thought that we were going to improve. And, really satisfied and happy for what we accomplished last year, and winning our division is no small feat. The competition is incredible on a nightly basis with four other teams that expect to go to the World Series every year. So we're excited about that. We're not happy with how the season ended, honestly. I think we have still a little bit of a bitter taste in our mouth, but we are proud of what we accomplished during the regular season.
Brandon Hyde of the Baltimore Orioles, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. And Brandon, when you look at the Major League Baseball playoff system, I know you and I and Mike here are not going to be able to change how they go about it. But you know, having two out of three to decide, you know, whether or not somebody is worthy of moving on in a round seems a little light to me. Obviously, if you finish on the wrong side of that, you probably have the same opinion. But what are your thoughts about, you know, you win 100 games and then all of a sudden you're faced with, you know, just a couple of games and not to be able to really prove what your team is all about?
Well, we got swept, so obviously I could, you know, I'm a little bitter about how it ended, but not, I mean, everybody's playing with the same rules. I mean, I feel proud of, you know, the winning our division. I think we ran into a little bit like everybody else that won their division. The 5 days off was not easy. You know, and, you know, a team like Texas, and give them all the credit because they played just great baseball. But when they went to, you know, they swept Tampa in two games, they swung the bat extremely well, and we kind of sat and waited. But we needed to, too. I mean, we did need a few days off, and we earned that because our guys were pretty banged up at the end of the year. But 5 days off is something that you're just not used to in baseball. And, you know, I'd be open to see if they could do something about that. I don't know what the answer is, though.
Talking to Brandon Hyde, manager of the Baltimore Orioles. And Brandon, of course, Cubs fans and Chicago baseball fans will remember you from your time on the Cubs and with the World Series champs back in 2016. I'm looking at this Baltimore roster, and I'm thinking as you were talking about all the young players that you have, you know, there are definite similarities there to the Cubs and when the team was on the rise in Baltimore and what you guys did last year. And obviously the World Series is the goal, but you see the parallels with, you know, a lot of young guys coming of age right at the same time with Baltimore?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, there's a, you know, how talented we were there in 15, 16, 17, and how young those players were in Chicago, as well as what the minor league system looked like from a position player standpoint. There's a lot of things that are very, very similar. And it's not just young big leaguers. It's young potential impact major league players with middle of the order type of bats and guys that, you know, playoff type of players. And I think that we have here that here in Baltimore, I think guys prove themselves. We still have young guys. We have guys coming too. Now, we were number one farm system ranked last year, and most of those guys are at the upper levels. So our AAA team was almost all prospects that really, really hit. And we're excited about those guys. But Gunnar Henderson's 22 years old. You know, Adley's still young. We're pitching. You know, Kyle Bradish kind of really came into his own. I compared him a lot to Arrieta last year. Honestly, what Arrieta, just from a stuff standpoint, when Jake was the best pitcher in baseball for a couple years. You know, we have some pitchers that are going to come into their own, like Kyle did last year. So there's a lot of similarities there between this team and those Cubs years.
Brandon, when you look at pitching and starting pitching, and the average start right now is 5.1 innings, and it's hovered right around there for the last 4 or 5 years. But the tendency is, you know, you have to have 3 to 4 pitchers to finish a game. How sustainable is that for any organization? And when you see, you know, power arms coming and going in bullpens every couple of years, and guys that were stars, you know, 2 or 3 years ago are out there, and sometimes their careers are over with. How sustainable is it to be able to run a pitching staff these days with the fact that, you know, the starting pitcher is not being asked to do too much?
No, it's definitely different. And I mean, it's been like that for a handful of years now, where people are trying to get creative with their rotation and try to do different things to try to keep their pitchers as healthy as possible throughout the year. I think the emphasis on starting pitching is going to increase, honestly. I think that Major League Baseball wants that. So I think organizations are going to look into maybe developing their starters in the minor leagues a little bit earlier and a little bit differently. The way the industry is developing pitching now is just different, and it's a lot of max effort. The training is different, And that's why the stuff out of most bullpens on a nightly basis is incredible and really hard to hit. Now, is that sustainable? You know, I don't know. But the pitching training is different these days, and it's a swing and miss. And it doesn't start in pro ball. This goes back to you're talking about your perfect game tournaments and your travel baseball stuff and your showcases where there's radar guns behind there and there's TrackMan and guys are trying to light it up. And back, you know, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. It was about getting people out. But now it's really about your stuff. So I think that that's I think it's fluid, and I think the way we're developing pitching is going to continue to evolve. And how you form a 13-man pitching staff is going to continue to – everybody's having conversations about that right now, of how to keep pitchers healthy, and we're going to continue to do that. I think we had six or seven starters all year last year. I feel great about that. I thought we did a good job keeping our starters healthy and our bullpen. We lost the best reliever in baseball, which was horrible and really tough to watch. But for the most part, we stayed healthy on the mound, and we're going to try to continue to do so.
Brandon, you were a guy who kind of worked your way up through the ranks in terms of coaching and then finally getting your shot as a manager with the Orioles and now entering your sixth season. We see a lot of guys now, including some this offseason, guys that are coming straight off the field and going right into that manager's chair. What do you think you learned, and how do you view the whole getting hired as a manager and people coming straight off the field versus guys like yourself where you were a bench coach, you worked your way through the coaching ranks, and you know kind of the experience you got doing that?
Yeah, I can only speak for myself. I mean, people have different paths to get to the big leagues. People have different paths coaching wise, but you know, from my path, which was. There's no way I could have managed in the big leagues unless I had all the experiences I had, honestly, from playing in the minor leagues to coaching an A-ball for a bunch of years, Double-A, roving, farm director, Cubs, you know, being on a major league coaching staff for 10 years or so, being on some bad teams, big league teams, and then being on a World Series champion, four playoff years in a row type of team. You know, all those type of experiences – I felt like then I was ready. I would not have been ready earlier than that, and I wasn't expecting to be ready earlier than that. I think that my goal was always to get to the big leagues. Once I got done playing, I would like to have been a major league coach. I didn't think about managing a ton. I thought maybe one day that would be incredible, but I didn't know if that was attainable or not. I just wanted to be on a major league staff and be a part of a great organization. And fortunately, I've been surrounded by unbelievable people and teachers and influences and players that have helped me grow. And if I didn't have those type of experiences, being on Joe Maddon's staff, that was unbelievably beneficial to me because Joe's a huge mentor of mine and somebody I talk to regularly. And watching how he ran a clubhouse, watching how he ran games, all those type of things. Was really benefited me when I got a manager's job.
In closing with you, Brandon, and Mike and I really appreciate your time today. I say the manager job in baseball, there's only 30, is one of the best jobs in sports and one of the worst. You look at a guy like Buck Showalter winning the Manager of the Year award in the National League 2 years ago, getting fired the next year. You look at situations like David Ross, considered to be one of the most solid ground guys with the Cubs and then being replaced by Council. How do you look at the job itself, and how did you look at David being moved out and Council moving in?
Well, yeah, I think it's an unbelievably gratifying job. It's really, really hard to get. You want to try to hold on to it as long as possible, but it is sports. It is professional sports. I don't think it's just baseball. You see NBA guys, there's a rash of NBA guys that had, you know, a team does well, and all of a sudden the team doesn't do well for a year, and they're gone. See it in football also. You're starting to see it in college sports. So I just think it's the coaching profession. People want to win. There's a lot of money at stake. I think that loyalty only goes so far at times, and when it comes to when you're a coach and you go into this industry understanding that, So I think it's just part of the job, honestly. And maybe things are – maybe people react a little quicker now than they did before. Maybe the money's a little higher. Maybe there's more pressure. Maybe social media, et cetera, has you know, but Billy Martin got fired 7 times. So, you know, there's a lot of things at place. But with David's case, you know, I'm friends with both David and Craig. You never want to see, David's a good friend of mine. You don't want to see anybody ever lose their job, and you don't want to see, you never want to see that. So, and I felt terrible for David at the time. And I'm sure he's going to land on his feet because he's an incredible person. He's a really good coach. He understands, he knows baseball extremely well. He can run a game. So, but it is the sport. You know, it's the world we live in as a coach, and you just come to expect anything.
Brandon, thanks so much for the time. Good luck. I know there's a starting pitching out there that may or may not be pitching for the Chicago White Sox or Chicago Cubs that might be in your future. We wish you the best of luck in obtaining a starting pitcher to go along with your fine team, and look forward to talking to you during spring training and the season. Thanks again.
It's really nice talking to you guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brandon. That's Brandon Hyde, American League Manager of the Year for the Baltimore Orioles. He was on Joe Maddon's staff with the World Series champion 2016 Cubs, and all-around great baseball guy. And we'll talk to another all-around great baseball guy during the 10 o'clock hour. Bob Costas will join us right around 10:15, so you want to stick around for that. In the meantime, Bruce, we need to take a quick timeout. We'll talk about Cubs convention when we return. But very quickly, before Chicago takes on Green Bay, tune in tomorrow, noon to 3, for the PNC Bank pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by your local Ford dealers and Fox Valley Coins. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. They'll get you set for the game. PNC Bank, official bank of the Chicago Bears. Then immediately after the game, instant reaction from Mully, Olin, and Pat on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Tullamore Dew. All of it can be heard on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. We'll talk Cubs convention. We will talk more free agency when we return. Bob Costas next hour right here on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Here comes the 0-1 to Bellinger. He swings, drills one deep right field, way back. This could go. It's gone! Grand Slam, Cody Bellinger.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse. Let's see what the Cubs and Sox are doing in the offseason on Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And there's a Zach Zaidman call from Cubs Radio of a Cody Bellinger home run. You can hear Zach right after us. DePaul basketball, DePaul and Georgetown coming up at 10:45, but Bruce, Cody Bellinger, the big name still out there for free agency, certainly as far as the Cubs are concerned. And I saw a text earlier asking what Bellinger's number is. The better question might be, what is the market for Bellinger right now?
Well, you know, again, the fortification of the Giants signing a center fielder and Kim, and the Toronto Blue Jays going out and signing Kiermaier again. They're not waiting around necessarily for Bellinger to have his market established. They're moving on with their offseason. Both teams would like him, but again, looking at Bellinger's market, most people still believe, and I kind of believe from day one after the Cubs ended their season in Milwaukee last October, that Bellinger was going to come back to the Cubs. There's not a lot of reasons to assume no. And from the Cub perspective, they need fortification at first. They need fortification in the center. They need a left-handed power bat for the middle of the lineup. They need a great base runner. They need a guy that just came in and fit perfectly. All of that, you know, he checks all the everything off that you want, okay? From the perspective for the agent and the player, the Cubs have money to spend. The Cubs are a big market team. The Cubs are a place where both Bellinger and his wife-to-be both enjoyed the heck out of the year they were there, where he was able to resuscitate his career. All of these things are positives. All we're waiting for is it 6, 7, 8 years? Is it 25, 28, $30 million a year? And that's just the business of baseball that's happening. So do I expect Cody Bellinger to still be a Chicago Cub? Yes, I do. Is there a chance that he won't be? Yeah, of course there's a chance he won't be. And that, you know, the Cubs pivot, get another first baseman down the line, and Pete Crow Armstrong is their opening day center fielder. There's a chance if you sign Bellinger that he's your opening day first baseman and that Armstrong is still your opening day center fielder, Mike.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating thing. I agree with you. Bellinger to the Cubs makes a ton of sense for everybody. I think at this point it's just waiting to see what the numbers are going to be, but we'll see how it plays out. We'll see what Scott Boras and Jed Hoyer can come up with. And coming up next, we will get back into it with our callers. Ken and Pingree Grove, you'll be first up next. And then around 10:15 or so, you'll definitely want to be here. The Hall of Famer, the great broadcaster, Bob Costas, will join us. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito. And for David today, this is Inside the Clubhouse on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.